It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Packer Brian Belaga, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
It is the best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour, today with Jason Wilde. And when they start, I will not interrupt once. If I interrupt, I will donate $100 to the charity of choice for A, Brian, and Jason Wilde. So, Brian, you have to help me out because at some point, Jason's going to say, "Are you okay?"
Oh, he's going to.
Homer said he wasn't going to interrupt because he interrupted too much. It's very seldom that I ever think I interrupted too much, but I did last week. So it is your segment, as long or as short as you want. I will not interrupt.
I don't think if he asks, "Are you okay?" that's considered an interruption.
No, that isn't. But I'm just saying, if he does, then you are going to have to answer, or I'll respond to anything that is asked, because otherwise it would be rude.
Yes.
Otherwise, I will not participate.
Okay.
I always wished I was good enough to be a professional athlete, especially a football player, but I only had to get hit once when I was about 8 and asked the other person, "Did that hurt you as much as it hurt me?" He goes, "No, that was great." I said, "No, I'm done with football." No one can like it if when they have contact, they get hurt significantly more than the person hitting them, assuming your ages are normal. Am I correct there? You had to love football, man.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. It was great. I mean, just
especially early on. Is it best moving people, hitting people? I also think you're kind of a team guy, so I think there's something you have to like being part of a team as well, but I'm guessing these things.
Yeah, I think besides the physicality of it, and it's kind of a, especially when you're younger, you get to go out and just hit people.
Yeah, like, you got to be good at it. You got to feel that you're hurting them more than they're hurting
you.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. Right. I mean, like, especially peewee football age. It was always just great, especially when you actually played the games against kids from other counties and cities, and you would, because you're in practice and you got your friends on the team and you don't want to punish your friends, but you want to hit them and they want to hit you too, but it was,
you want to punish the other people.
Yes, you wanted to hit those people as hard as humanly possible, and that was something I set out to do every single game in peewee football and high school. And then obviously things change a little bit in college because there's guys that are either older than you and bigger than you and stronger than you. And until you catch up physically, then you can start imposing your will on people, and you can do that to guys. Now that's very satisfying as well. Getting to the college ranks and doing that to people. And then in the pros, you'll be lucky if you get a pancake, 4 times a year. And most of the time, like, there's a chance the D lineman like falls over somebody. So like, it's
that,
not even,
they talk about these other things. That has to be the adjustment to where you,
yeah.
Now some players can probably still do it at the pro level, a few of them, but that has to be the adjustment. I can't whoop on anybody anymore.
Yeah. I mean, you could be physical guys and hit them hard, but the way you dominated in college and could ragdoll guys and just toss guys around, like, that just doesn't because I think that is part of the adjustment period for guys, especially linemen coming out of college, is you're not just going to toss these guys around, these D linemen. And then for the defensive line thing, I was a great bull rusher in college. I walk guys back. The first time you hit a good tackle or a good guard and he just stops you dead in your tracks and you go, "Oh boy, okay, I was a good bull rusher in college. These guys are built a little bit different." It's the same way with the D lineman. It's like, I could handle guys' speed rushes, and if they tried to bull rush me, it was, it had to be a first round prospect that you were concerned about. Like when you go against JJ when he was at Wisconsin, or Brandon Graham and guys like that, like those were true Division I or not Division One, first round picks. Like, those guys were legitimate, like, obviously. But that's not everyone in college. And if you develop in college a certain way, you're ragdolling guys. And that's an adjustment that you have to make going into the NFL. And I think the team aspect of it, too, is why I loved it. Because as much as the other sports are great that are team sports, right? Baseball, basketball, soccer, things like that. I feel like the camaraderie of football is just different. Like, maybe hockey's on the same level too, from that standpoint, because there is a lot of pain received and given. And when there's that much, like, raw emotion of pain being delivered and physicality and brutality to a game, there's no one that shares that company with you more than your teammates. Like, the ups and downs in that, and the ebbs and flows of games, just not just seasons, but games, battling through injuries, battling through.
Right. It's different patches than baseball, where they say you have so much negative, you make an out 7 of 10 times. Yeah, but you don't get hurt.
Yeah, there's exactly.
There's no pain. You aren't in more pain after a 0-for-3 than you are for a 3-for-3, right?
Correct. Yeah. You're just not feeling it.
And I wanted to ask you about the people I admired the most were the people in high school that weren't very good. Like, yeah. I mean, when I lost, I didn't get beat up, too. It was like, all right, I beat you, so now I get to beat you up, too. And it's not going to change. And there has to be, I don't know if it's a toughness or what it is. You know, somebody goes in high school against you, in a couple minutes, they know what they're in for.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. My dad could tell the story better than I could, but we were in the state semifinal at home against Caneland, and I was playing defense. I played DN and tackle. I was always on the field, and this poor tackle, I mean, he was a big kid, right? He wasn't a tiny kid. He was a bigger kid. But I was absolutely putting it on him from snap one. Like, from snap one, I was making his life very difficult.
Now, that was when you were on what? Offense or defense?
Defense.
Okay.
Defense. When I was playing defensive end.
Right.
And my dad said they came off on the sideline after a series, and the coach, the head, because he was on the chain game. So he got to stand right there, and he got to hear all the talk because he did the chain game for the home games. And he could hear the coaches just absolutely just ripping into this kid. Like, aren't you going to do anything out there to try to – like? And he tells me after the game, and, you know, I don't think much about it after the game, but, like, I look back on it now, and I'm like, the kid just was outmatched.
Right.
Like that's just what it was. Like, and I'm not tooting my own horn, but, like, in high school, there is levels for sure. Like, you see D1 prospects going up against kids that aren't going to play any college football. It's like, come on, man. Like, what do you think is about to happen here? Like,
right. I don't know how you deal with that. Go to the line and go, all right, going to get whooped again this time. And yeah. You're competitive. You have a certain level. And you not only get crushed, you can't get up the next day, because I may have told you this, that, can you imagine trying to tackle Bo Jackson or Herschel Walker when they're a senior in high school? The friend I knew was at Hudson, and they played Jim Bertelsen, who wasn't that good. After the first guy tried to tackle him, he got hurt so bad. Just trying to tackle him, guys were trying to throw body blocks, like they were going to tackle him that way, hoping that he would go over them.
Yeah.
You know, he says, I played with these guys, and half, they never tackled that way, but against him, because it just hurt.
Well, just think about kids trying to tackle Derrick Henry in high school.
Yes.
Like, what are you going to do to that guy?
I'm just going to try to hold him and hope, like, eight of us can bring him down, right? And if he's got some open field, nice knowing you.
Let him go. Just let him go.
I don't know. I'm curious.
Don't get in his way. Like, but that's the thing. Like, I think kids in based on, like, you know, the ones that that weren't going to go D1, it's only 1% that go out of there, right, that go D1, right? It's a very small percentage. So it's majority of kids. It's the major majority of kids. I just think that they, and this is why I loved it in high school. I mean, you're playing for your friends. Like, that's that, you know what I mean? Like, you're playing for your friends and you're playing for your buddies. And to me, like, that's what makes those kids continue to stay in and do it and do it and do it. They love it.
But I'm thinking, like, if somebody dunks on you post-rising, that's nothing compared to getting whooped on a football field.
No, I don't think it's even close. Like, because the thing is, like, you get posterized once in a game, it's like, oh, that sucked. Like, if you're playing football and you're
going up against someone, pancaked 8 times.
Yeah, you're getting abused all game. It's like, oh my gosh, this. And then at that time, it was, you know, in high school, that was when the film sessions were starting to become very popular. So then you go watch it, right? And then you're a kid sitting in film room, and you thought that was just for the pro kids and the college kids. No, like, you go rewatch that, and
right, but that tells you how stupid the other people who are rip on you.
Yeah,
you know, well, there's a range.
Well, right. Because you would look at those kids and go, well, I would like to see if you've done better than that stuff. Like,
and they saw it. It's not, you know, maybe some kids quit or don't. I mean, that happens too. But I mean, it's that's what I said. It's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose and feel like you should go to the hospital.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. And, like, listen, in high school. And even in college, once I developed it, once I got into my sophomore year and I wasn't in survival mode, I certainly went out there with bad intentions every single game. Like, there's no doubt. You know what I mean? You went out there with the worst intentions possible. And, like, that's how you played the game. And then, obviously, with the pro, when you get to the pro level, it becomes so much more of a, like, yes, it's very physical. And you can go out there and yeah, but it's a mental game.
You got to pick your spots. Before we coach, because Jason's coming in, I just want to ask you this. I don't know your dad, but I can imagine your dad's hearing that. He wanted to go over to the coach and say, you're an idiot.
Probably. He probably did. He probably wanted to say, what do you want the kid to do?
Yeah. I thought you know football.
Yeah.
Why didn't you help him? You know, after one play, you just should have thought, we need to, I don't know. If I was playing, and I'm a coach, and I'm, and you're on the other team, I'm at least double-teaming you, and if necessary, I'm going to have 3 guys on you because I'm going to lose to somebody other than you.
And that's exactly what happened the next week at State against Sigurdur Griffin. I beat the tackle. The guard was right there. I beat the guard. The running back was sitting right there. And then the ball was gone. And it's just like, well, okay.
So somebody else has got to.
Yeah, someone else has to win. Like, and they were
so
very.
So 3's the most you ever faced. I love it.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Brian Bulaga, the Doc, took on all 3 his senior year in high school. And was that the championship game or the semifinals? Did you make it?
That was the state game. That the offense was very smart with how they protected. They were very pro-like. We'll put it that way.
Yeah.
Very pro-like.
Jason Wilde and the Doctor, Brian Bulaga, next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Jason Wilde on the Jason Wilde Yingling Hotline. Yeah, he's so special. He has his own Yingling Hotline. I haven't checked with Yingling, but I don't need to. It's now the time. With the Doc, Brian Bulaga. Take it away, Doc.
Jason, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm good. How's were you allowed back in the building today to try to talk to people or not today?
No. I'm with your old friend Sean Rozacek from TaylorMade, and the girls are getting fitted for golf clubs, and I don't know what the heck's going on. I just know that I need to bring my checkbook, so...
Yep.
No access today, none tomorrow. We are hoping, and I know that your guy Jason Whalers, as you like to call him, is hoping to get a replacement day of access. So I'm hoping that occurs because, like I have complained about repeatedly, I had a lot of football questions I wanted to get to that I didn't get to ask yesterday. So hoping that that happens because, you know, I'm super intrigued to talk to Matthew Golden, to Jordan Morgan, to Jaden Reed, who, I mean, we have, by the way, we haven't even talked to Zaire Franklin or Javon Hargrave yet. And, you know, those guys signed in March. So I think there's a lot of fans that want to hear from those guys, and hopefully we do that next week.
What stood out in the open at the open portion of practice yesterday to you? What stood out? Anything?
So, you know, as you well know, and you are on record having said you hate OTAs, the quality of the work is in the eye of the beholder, obviously. And, you know, and Matt LaFleur lamented how, you know, mostly useless it is for the guys that play your position or the guys that play on the defensive line. And I think he's obviously exactly right, right? You just don't, you're not getting, you can work on your technique, you can work on your footwork, you can work on all the things, but as you and Tausch talked about, it doesn't really help you to have some knucklehead defensive end slam into your chest full force when you're not in pads. So I think there was, you know, I think watching the defense, there was a, you know, I saw Brenton Cox have some pretty good moments. But again, how much, what do I measure that in, right? Like, it was Lucas Van Ness and Cox at times. It was Lucas Van Ness is obviously going to be the guy for as long as they don't have Micah to start the season, and then he'll be Micah's running mate thereafter. So I think he's another guy I wanted to talk to, obviously. But the things that I really wanted to see, hard to judge, right? I mean, Jordan Love threw an interception to Evan Williams yesterday in the team period where he underthrew a deep ball pretty badly. Does that mean that Jordan Love is no longer good at throwing the deep ball? No, of course not, right? I mean, he's working the rust off and trying different things, maybe not to the degree that Aaron used to, because Aaron used to experiment like crazy during this time of the year. But, you know, it's just it's such a difficult thing to gauge on what you're seeing. It's more for me like, you know, Keyshawn Nixon and Carrington Valentine took a ton of reps as the number one and number two corner. They worked in Cisse a little bit, but not a ton. Bo Melton was back at wide receiver officially. He had his white jersey on, so they at least don't feel like they have to mess around with him playing two positions. But to me, the biggest thing is I saw Tucker Kraft, who looked great while he was doing his rehab on the side. And then he, you know, came over and shot the breeze with us for a little while on the sideline. And he's just, my biggest takeaway is he's in great spirits and he's feeling extremely confident about where he's at in terms of being ready for the opener.
That's good. What, from a defensive standpoint, what did the front look like? Like, what type of defense was it? Was it three down? Was it four down?
Yeah, it was three down. It was Warren Brinson was the nose. And then it was Hargrave and Carl Brooks as the ends. Obviously, the linebackers were Franklin and Edgerrin Cooper. And then more often than not, and they rotated the spot opposite of Van Ness, but it was Sorrell, and then it was Cox. The guy that we all, you know, are very curious about, because we hardly saw him last year, Baby Micah, as he was nicknamed, not that he likes that nickname, but Colin Oliver wasn't practicing. And you know, again, not being able to go talk to him and ask him what's going on, like, for a guy that needs every rep he can get, that was less than ideal, right? You know, Damani Jackson, the sixth-round pick that was, you know, played in Alabama and was the number one high school recruit in the state of California. Again, that's a guy who's going to need reps, right? He got benched at Alabama last year, bounced back, played pretty well down the stretch, but he needs to work. He wasn't practicing either. We don't They're not required to give us any injury information, so we don't have it as to why those guys aren't practicing. But, you know, to your point about how you felt about OTAs, you certainly wanted to work on your fundamentals and kind of knock the rust off. For other guys, though, it's more than just knock the rust off. It's I need the work, right? I need to get out there. You know, they played a bunch of nickel, and so Javon Bullard, which took a little bit of adjusting too, because he changed his number. He's the new number 7 now that it was available after Quay Walker's departure. But he was on the field a ton. And then look, their safeties. If you can even get Ben Johnson to compliment guys on your team, given how Ben Johnson seems to operate, the fact that he views those guys as the best safety tandems they faced last year and possibly the best in the league, you know, those guys were right where you'd expect them to be. So that was the defense. Offensively, from left to right, it was Morgan. It was Aaron Banks. It was Sean Ryan. It was Belton, who I saw some moments where I was kind of like, ooh, that's not what you're looking for. And then it was Darian Kennard, because obviously Tom's not ready to go. They rotated all their wide receivers through, but it was mostly Golden, Watson, and Reed. I did not see Marshawn Lloyd take a team rep. So I saw Pierre Strong, and then it was obviously Chris Brooks who got the first snap at running back. So that was kind of the rundown. Luke Musgrave and Josh Wiley were the tight ends. But again, you know, Tucker and I were talking on the sideline and nothing on the record, but we were kind of joking about it, because I had said to him, I'm like, you know, it's crazy how much you play. Like, you know, you go down against Carolina, and I said, I keep using this stat in my stories, but you still played more snaps than Luke did. Like, he played 428 and Luke played like 417, and Musgrave played all 17 games. And so I do think, you know, that he is such an important piece that's why my biggest takeaway wasn't really anything I saw in 11-on-11. It was the fact that Tucker Kraft looks like he's right where he needs to be, and Matt LaFleur is out there saying, you know, he looks like he should be out there right now. That's how good he feels and how good he looks.
Well, that's encouraging. That's encouraging. So
that's what I try to do, is bring encouragement.
Yeah, I mean, a time of encouragement when there's a little bit of lack of encouragement. And I don't want to talk about it too much, because obviously we're gathering information, and so is everyone else. Clearly, Matt did. I mean, I watched some of Matt's presser. He stayed away from the question very, very well, obviously. But has there been anything new besides, obviously, that no charges were filed, there's more investigation that needs to take place? Is there anything new that is come out, or things that have happened with Josh Jacobs?
So, again, you know, we're all of us that are talking about this are obviously trying to be extremely cautious about how we frame things. And frankly, like, I don't want to say anything that gets misconstrued and gets me in trouble.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, I have to speak honestly, and you know, Strofe obviously and I were talking yesterday, because I can tell you that in talking to multiple people that are in law enforcement or are in the legal system, they did the word I heard multiple times was puzzling or unusual or odd. The statement that the Brown County District Attorney issued, because obviously this is a high profile media case, when they say, and I'm going to read it so I don't misquote it, our office has requested additional investigation as there is reason to believe that additional evidence may exist that would impact whether, important word there, whether criminal charges are appropriate and what charges would be issued. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that there won't be charges issued, right? There still very well could be. And I'm not in any way familiar with what actually happened. Only a couple people know what actually happened in that house. But I would say the inclusion of the phrase whether criminal charges are appropriate, at least to my ears, perks up on there's a possibility here that not only did they choose not to pursue charges now, but there's a possibility that as they gather more information and more evidence, they may choose not to issue charges at all. And this may not be what it appears to be. Now, again, let me reiterate that is only a possibility. I am in no way saying that that's what's going to happen or is likely to happen, because I don't know. But the choice of word there of whether at least opens the door, even if it's just a crack, that there could be more out there that will cause them not to pursue charges at all. And when you take that combined with what the statement from Josh Jacobs' attorneys, you know, arguing that they believe that there is evidence that will alter the way this is viewed and the narrative and exonerate their client, which again, that's their job. I'm not here to say he should be exonerated because I don't know, but it does at least pique your interest and have your antenna go up to say, you know, I wonder what this evidence could be, because again, the guys that are on the Hobart Lawrence police force are they are public servants who are doing the best job they can. And they have a lower threshold to arrest for charges of domestic abuse than the district attorney has to pursue them in court, right? As they explain in that statement, which I'm not going to read the whole thing, they say they to pursue charges, they have to believe that they can, beyond a reasonable doubt, win the case. And maybe they won't feel that way when they're done with this process. Maybe they will feel like lesser charges are appropriate than the one felony that was included. We don't know. But from a purely football perspective, which is the only thing I can speak intelligently to, like, A, it's still possible, even if they don't pursue charges at all, he could still face a suspension, because the personal conduct policy does not require conviction in a court of law for them to be suspended. And while Matt LaFleur didn't want to answer these questions, part of this equation is they need to know his availability, because as you and I talked about yesterday on our show, and as we have talked about multiple times during the offseason, I don't like their running back options behind him. If in the James Campen world, where people who don't remember James Campen, he's now the offensive line coach with the Steelers, but he was Blues offensive line coach in Tauschus for a long time, he never liked to say that guys would get injured. So he would say, you know, if a guy breaks a shoelace or busts a chin strap, well, if Josh Jacobs breaks a shoelace or busts a chin strap and they can't find a new chin strap for four games, I don't like their options behind him. I don't say this in a mean way, but your top two options are Chris Brooks, who carried the ball 27 times last season total, which is the same number of times that Emmanuel Wilson, who they did not re-sign, carried it in a single game when he started in place of Jacobs and ran for 107 yards and two touchdowns. He's option one. Option two is Marshawn Lloyd, who out of 36 possible NFL games, including playoffs, since he entered the league, has missed 35 of them due to injury. So even LaFleur's comments about him yesterday, he was clearly hedging because he has to. And then after that, it's three other dudes who've never carried the ball in the NFL. So we can argue that, and you know this as well as I do, that low-round draft picks and free agents at that position have had success in this league, not so much at left tackle or right tackle, but maybe they find somebody off. If it comes down to it in September and Josh Jacobs' status is in limbo or he's suspended or whatever ends up happening, I didn't like where they were at before, and now with this hanging over them, I really just don't like their backup options. And they can sell us all they want on how good they feel about Brooks and Lloyd, but I live in the real world, and they are those are not ideal guys to have number one and number two on your depth chart.
I'm with you. That's what I was going to ask was, I don't know how the league has changed with the personal conduct policy and whether or not, even if there's no charges at all, even if there is a misdemeanor, could they still suspend? And I think the I think it's yes, correct?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Now, again, there's a varying, like as Adam Schefter told Jen Gabe and Chewy, like if there's a conviction of some sort, it's an automatic six games.
Yeah.
So that could, I mean, again, I am not in any way minimizing the seriousness of the allegations and the damage that was potentially done to the accuser. What I am simply saying is from the football perspective, this can be a very problematic scenario for just figuring out who's going to carry the football for you in the run game. And that is not as important as the safety of other human beings and the behavior of a angry person in a relationship, but it is also part of the reality, and that's what we're here to talk about too, is the football part of it.
Correct. And that's what, I mean, you and I talked about, I mean, I said it on your show yesterday, like I'm not trying to get into the real life perspective of this and what went on. We're just talking from a football sense. That's really all is where we're coming from on this. I'm not here to investigate what happened. That's not what I'm here to do. I just want to talk about the football aspect of it and how it relates to the Green Bay Packers. As Homer always says, how does it relate to the Green Bay Packers?
Yep.
And that's, I think that's what we're talking about. Because obviously, you said, there's only a couple people that know what happened.
And let's be honest, like Sean Ryan, for example, got hit with a six-game suspension for performance-enhancing substances, right? It was his rookie year when he wasn't playing anyway. So it, like, yeah, still a serious thing, and you get suspended and you miss checks. And I'm not undercutting the importance of that to him and his finances and the embarrassment he felt and all that. But that suspension his rookie year when he wasn't playing anyway, if that were to happen now, we'd be having a huge conversation about him, and it wouldn't be about the morality of using performance-enhancing substances. It would be about your starting center is gone for six games.
Correct.
And so while there are different things that would trigger a suspension, they both affect the football part of it, and that's what we're trying to focus on in terms of what our job is in terms of analyzing and discussing everybody's favorite football team.
Correct. Homer, do you have anything? Jason, just so you know, Homer stated before the show, no interrupting. He's not going to interrupt at all, or he would owe money to the charity of our choice. So Homer is staying silent. So that's why I asked. Homer, do you have anything?
Because I do have something. I want to know the best opposing coach in the division, according to both of you. Matt LaFleur's out. Dan Campbell, Kevin O'Connell, Ben Johnson. Who's the best of those three?
Ooh. I'm disappointed that you didn't interrupt, because the court-appointed special advocates of Brown County would have been happy to take your $100 after Brian and I and Corey Lindsley got together last week to do that event. I am a Kevin O'Connell guy, Brian. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if it's because he'd be the kind of coach I'd want to play for. Like, I know the guys in Chicago love Ben Johnson. He's a little douchey for my liking. Dan Campbell, you know, I was a doubter with him when he got the job, and it was a rocky start for him. Like, I thought his kind of biting kneecaps, kind of meatheadish approach was not going to resonate, and I was 1,000% wrong. It has worked, and they have an identity, but I still, if I'm picking from the current three, I'm personally picking Kevin O'Connell.
I'm right there with you. I like O'Connell. I think I think he gets underrated, even though he's not paid that way. I think he's underrated as a coach. I think he's a really good coach. He's a great offensive mind. And I think guys like playing for him. Honestly, So, like, that, to me,
and in fairness, to your point, like, he's also got a defensive coordinator that should be a head coach in the league. So that helps. Like, he's hired well on the other side of the ball. That's not his expertise.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so, like, and that's not taking anything away from Ben Johnson or from, you know, what the Lions have going on. Like, I'm not taking anything away from Campbell. Like, I just think that O'Connell would be a guy that I would like to play for. I think he'd be a good head coach, good play caller, good for the locker room and all those things. So it's kind of where I stand. I'm with you.
Well, he's clearly not getting through to J.J. McCarthy based on the difference between J.J. McCarthy's answer about his interactions with Kyler Murray in the quarterback room and Kyler Murray's answer to that question. I found that intriguing and concerning about old nine, as he likes to call himself.
Very bad response. We'll
I can ask you then as a follow-up, who's going to be the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings? Who is going to start the most games this season?
Kyler Murray. If both of them are healthy, I mean, look, first of all, I don't want to be a hypocrite. Like, I want guys to be honest. And if that's J.J. McCarthy's view of how that works in that room, I appreciate his honesty. But that tells me that he's not interested in learning from a guy who's going into year eight if he just wants to sit on the opposite side. It tells me that his attitude stinks if that's how he feels. So, look, I don't think Kyler Murray is the second coming of Aaron Charles Rodgers, but I think that's a slam dunk, and I think that's just a matter of when, not if, J.J. McCarthy is playing somewhere else trying to recapture his draft status and be a starter somewhere.
Thanks, Jason.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde on the Jason Wilde Yingling Hotline, and we'll get from the Dr. Football, Brian Bulaga, on who will be the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, whenever or wherever you're listening, just know we are live on YouTube as well. Yes, giving it some questions on YouTube. You can watch the show, see what's happening in the studio, comment along with us. Also, if the Brewers have an evening game at home, whether or not the dome is open or closed. Just search ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube and subscribe today. The Brian Bulaga and Jason Woolley segment went well. I do have some information for you, Brian. The NFL can suspend a player under the personal conduct policy even if no criminal charges are filed. The policy holds players to a higher standard than the legal system. All players can be penalized if an independent league investigation finds credible evidence that they engaged in prohibited conduct. You can even get, like, Ben Roethlisberger received a suspension when prosecutors dropped the case. I don't know that he was ever charged with anything. I don't remember. The policy mandates a baseline 6-game suspension without pay for violations involving assault, battery, domestic violence, or sexual assault, even without legal charges. So someone would have to do some research. That,
Yeah. Yeah, so essentially the league can do whatever they want.
Right. And they, if I was a player, would make me realize that I don't want to do anything or be a part of anything that makes the police show up. Because that basically says, as you did, league can do anything. When you can, hold on, this is, a player can be penalized. I don't know if I was the players union, I'm not sure I would accept this, but a player can be penalized if an independent league investigation finds credible evidence that they engaged in prohibited conduct. Well, if they engage in prohibited conduct, wouldn't there be a charge? But if it's credible evidence. So I guess that's covering in case they feel like the locals are just covering up because it's a famous athlete or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm sure the specifics, and someone can look into various cases where what's happened and when has there been no suspension. So I know this. If I'm a player, I only care about, I mean, I care about the player and stuff like that, but I just want it to get taken care of. I just want it to get resolved. No one ever wants, you want a person to be treated fairly, and if something bad was done, then they need to pay the price for it. But, I mean, that's probably why I wouldn't let the players talk, because if I was the players, I just want it to go away. I know that sounds terrible, it's horrible, but I just want it to go away so we can move on with the football, and I want it to be handled whatever is appropriate legally. But come on, we got to move on. You couldn't say that.
You just can't say that.
Right. But that's what everybody thinks privately, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think guys want to just handle the business at hand. And this is something that's stepping into the front line of that, right? Like, this is overshadowing what they're supposed to be doing and talking about and being about. And that's getting ready for a season with a lot of expectations.
And it's never going away. It's never becoming less until it's resolved.
Correct.
It's like, they don't care now. They care now. And I said about today, just had to agree with, but it's the same tomorrow and the same after that and the same after that. Everybody wondering because, you know, are they going to pick up another player? Just all these things. And then all the players, it's tough to win. And it just, as you said, McCarthy said it best. You don't want people asking questions about you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, don't talk about other people and don't answer questions for other people. Like, that's it. Like that. And this is, unfortunately, like a perfect example of that.
Yes.
Like, this is exactly that.
And I don't want it to sound rude but this is, if you're going to have it happen, it's not, imagine if it was the week before the start of the season.
Oh, yeah.
It's bad. It's wrong. You don't want it to ever happen. But if you had to pick a time of the year, this isn't a bad one. You got some time to deal with whatever the reality is after it's determined and go from there. They don't show up training camp till August 1st now?
I think so. July, August.
Yeah, you got a couple months. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right, back to who's going to be the quarterback for the Vikings? You agree, like Jason, it's definitely going to be Kyler Murray?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Murray. I think it's going to be Murray. I mean, that response from McCarthy in that interview was awful. I just treat it like he's someone in high school, sits across the room from me. Like, what kind of response is that? Like, that is, like, that's terrible. Like, that's awful.
And Matt, I want to ask you how the other players on the team would think, knowing that that's the guy that possibly could lead us?
What? Exactly.
Right?
Didn't Kyler Murray win Rookie of the Year?
I think he did. I don't.
Yeah, but, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I understand that it hasn't gone well for him the last few years. It hasn't gone well for anyone in Arizona the last few years, but the dude does come in with some credentials. He's a Pro Bowler. I think he won Rookie of the Year. Like, he comes in with some street cred.
Yes, like based on what other people in the league have said.
Yes, like you have to give him some respect.
It's not like only his mom and dad said he's pretty good.
No, exactly. Yes, so like you have to show some respect. And gosh, that interview was the exact opposite of that.
It just keeps getting worse for him, and you think it can't. Milwaukee weight loss started at 229. Now I'm at 205. And I say this every time. I look forward to telling you where I'm at in a month, 3 months, 6 months, because I'll be where I am now. I eat less and I'm fine with eating less. That to me is what any weight loss program wants. And Milwaukee weight loss works. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. I did it partially because people said it's almost easy. No weight loss program can kind of be easy. Well, it is. The way they have it set up, there's no counting calories, nothing weird, no intense workouts, no prepackaged meals. They just set it up so you can eat like this and you'll like it. And I do. And I'll continue doing it. And I think I'll live the rest of my life, which I expect at least another 50 years. I think I got 121. And I'm going to be around 200. And I was 230. And it's all because of Milwaukee Weight Loss. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. 262-235-3980. 262-235-3980. It might not work for you doing exactly what I've done. Doesn't matter. I'm not the first. Everybody I've talked to. Success. MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com. A short fourth quarter. Though we can be, this could be Brian Bulaga's greatest in progress because the game doesn't start for an hour and a half. An hour and a half. What is going on? They think it's the NCAA final? Next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
The Brian Bulaga Homer I mentioned about subscribe on YouTube. You can ask questions. Homer, you always ask for questions, then you never use them. I said, not true, but I do need to get better at using them. Here we have one. Brian, did you play varsity as a freshman or sophomore? And if so, was there ever a high school game that you felt overwhelmed?
I played varsity my sophomore year, but they called me up for the playoffs only. So I played sophomore as a freshman. And then my sophomore year, I played sophomore. And then for the playoffs, I got called up and I ended up being a starter in the playoffs as a sophomore, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and how did that go? Because if I were you and I played well, I go, I should have been playing a lot more all year. But you never think the way I did.
No, but I played really well in the playoffs. And, yeah, I was a little not confused because it was a good learning experience to play just sophomore ball with my friends and everything like that. It was a good experience.
And you had to, and you proved something by them changing that late into a big game, putting you in. That showed
correct.
A lot.
Yeah, correct. Yeah,
that showed a ton of respect.
Yeah, gave the coaches a lot of confidence, putting me in the game as a sophomore, going, okay, go get it done.
Yeah, we're willing to take the risk. We're smart. We'd have been playing you the whole year, but we didn't. But we need you now. Let's see what happens. Yeah, I'm guessing that was – were you even scared or nervous or
– I was a little nervous because, like, those were all my brother's friends. That was – my brother was still in college.
You talked about this,
My brother was still in high school, so those are all his buddies.
You mess up, you got to live with that forever. Yeah,
exactly.
You might have been in the Hall of Fame, but, dude, I remember when you were a sophomore, right?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
They can't use that, can they?
No. I did my part.
All right. As stated, this might be Hall of Fame ESPN Radio in progress after the Brian Bulaga Omer. Next. Love me right.